Dr. Paul, welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. In my 30 plus years as a pediatrician, the one thing that's got me in my heart is story after story after story where parents tell me of getting the vaccines according to the recommendations of their pediatrician and then watching their child suffer. And this is something that we try to highlight for you on this show. We've got a story. Anna is the mom. She tells the story of her son, Callum. When he was 10 months old, he was behind on his vaccines. They gave him 5 all in that day. He ended up hospitalized, ended up with seizures, and he's never been quite the same since, although he's recovered masterfully, and you get to meet the young man. But I wanted you to hear that story because this is a story I've heard over and over again. I then talk with a couple doctors, and today you're going to hear from Dr. DeMoss, who really gets into what you can do to help boost natural immunity. And then with Dr. Karfeld, we cover natural immunity, the COVID situation, what you can do both to prevent and maybe what you do if you get COVID. We discuss the vaccines. We talk about the world as it is today, packed with information. Don't miss a minute of it. I'm Dr. Paul. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul from the Heart. This week, I'm giving you the real update about what's going on with me and the medical board. This one's big. I've actually started a fundraiser called drpaulsfight.com. Go there and check it out. It's time for us to unite and band together. So let me give you the lowdown on what's happened. Many of you remember I published the article, The Big Vaxxed Unvaxxed Study, last November of 2020, 5 days after it was available online on December 3rd. Hey, that's exactly a year ago. They yanked my license, emergency suspension of my license. I was a threat to public health. I then sent through my attorney a tort document giving me the right to sue them this past May. Within the last month, they negotiated with my attorney that I could go back to work. I was, however, forbidden from seeing patients who were just there for well child visits or for vaccine visits. I was forbidden to talk about vaccines either directly to patients or to my staff. And a clue, I was not to engage in any research involving patients. And I say a clue because that's curious to me. Medical board's job, if you will, their whole reason to be in existence is to improve public health. And they are doing that traditionally by finding doctors who are working inebriated, so they are compromised by their substance use, or doctors who are actually abusing patients. Generally, it's a sexual abuse situation under anesthesia, that sort of thing. Boards now, it appears, are in this role of sort of guarding the information that's coming out of physicians' offices or their whatever they're doing, right? And what are they doing controlling research? That's censorship. And that has no place, I believe, in the realm of a medical board. I accepted that agreement because I did need to get back to work to save my practice. They were really needing my help, and I'm able to at least see some of the sickest kids, which is something that I'm very, very good at. And it's been helpful to my practice. Now, Thanksgiving just happened. Right before Thanksgiving, the board sent me a brand new complaint, 20 pages long. My attorney asked me to go through it file by file, complaint by complaint. When I say complaint, these are not patient complaints, folks. These are things the board is making up that almost in every case has to do with informed consent. I'm basically being charged with the fact that, hey, Dr. Paul, by providing informed consent, you're not supporting the CDC schedule, and the CDC schedule is what we're supposed to be doing. I thought, and Oregon law states, that parents have the right to decide what happens to their children when it comes to vaccines. So I spent 3 days after Thanksgiving doing this massive response, come to work right after Thanksgiving to find 2 new complaints from the medical board. This first one is 24 pages long. Perusing it, I see nothing new. I have not had an opportunity yet to go detail by detail. That will take a few days of work. And the other one is what's most telling. The Pediatric Health Outcomes Initiative is a nonprofit I started in 2017 for the sole purpose, after getting IRB approval, Institutional Review Board approval, the sole purpose of enrolling newborns and tracking their health for 18 years. It's called a registry. It's not research at this point. You're merely enrolling children so that all researchers in the future can have access to really good data. The medical board is now putting queries about what's going on with that. And the way it's worded, it's as if I am breaking some agreement that I've had with them to not do research. But it's telling to me that their focus is all about preventing information from reaching the public. So, big announcement, DrPaulsFight.com. It is very clear to me that I am meant, if I'm going to do justice by our world, justice to the families who've suffered from vaccine injury, justice to getting the information out that the world needs, I need to face this board and take them on with everything I've got. My attorney says that's going to take $250,000 just to get through the 2 weeks in January. And so that's what we're all about right now. Dr. Paul's Fight. The beauty of this site, folks, is you don't have to have money. If you want to click on the button where you pray for me, please do so. Prayer is powerful. United, we are going to win. So go to DrPaulsFight.com. Click on the donation button if you're able. Click on the prayer button. Share this, and we're going to take them on and get the information out to the world that the world deserves to know. Thanks from the bottom of my heart. Welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. It is my privilege and honor to be with Anna and Caleb. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
You have a story to share about what happened to this young man when he was just a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe let's start there. Tell me what happened.
Okay, well, when Caleb was about 10 months old, we went in to his, you know, well baby checkup. And I believe it was like a few, it was a little late. I don't think 10 months was on the thing. But he was behind on some of his vaccines, mm-hmm. because he had been sick at previous well baby checkup. So yeah. They said, okay, well, we're going to catch up on his vaccines today. And at that time, I vaccinated all my children. I didn't question. That's what the, you know, that's what the doctors told you to do. And
sure.
That's what you do.
And you were in the military, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
they're so very thorough at keeping you up on vaccines.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he had several vaccines at that appointment. And they told me, you know, when you go home, you give him Motrin, Tylenol, you know, keep the fevers down and stuff like that. You know, you're conditioned to kind of believe that that's all normal, mm-hmm. you know, being sick after vaccines. So I brought him home, and let's see, a little after being home for a couple hours, of course, he started developing a fever. So I was like, okay, you know, that's kind of common, you know. But he seemed to get progressively worse. He was throwing up. He was nursing at the time, so mm-hmm. he was throwing up his food.
And that's not something he typically did.
No,
okay.
No. Throwing up. Then he actually stopped wanting to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just very lethargic, almost like limp. So I was like, I'm not really comfortable with this. I'm going to take him to the Naval Hospital ER. The head of pediatrics actually came down to take a look at him. And I said, you know, I asked her, I said, he had vaccines today. Could this be, you know, a vaccine reaction or something? And she, her tone kind of changed with me after that. Like, no. And she was like, had kind of an attitude with me and basically sent me home and said, you know, follow up with your doctor. His fever was getting higher. At one point, I went in to check on him and picked him up, and it was like his eyes kind of like rolled back in his head, and it looked like he was having a seizure. And his body just pretty much, when I lifted him up, he like went completely like limp. And I was like, this does not seem okay, like a limp baby, you know? So I took him back in.
Is this still the first day, or
this is late in the evening, like really late in the evening by this time. So I took him back, and it was pretty much the same thing. They looked him over and said, oh, you know, we think, you know, he has rotavirus or whatever. And I was like, well, I'm just not comfortable taking him home. And they refused to admit him into the hospital and said, follow up with your doctor in the morning. Okay. So I pretty much stayed up all night watching him. His pediatric doctor was like, no, this is not, like, I see this baby yesterday. He's not what he was like the day before. And there's something definitely wrong. He just had vaccines. I believe he's having vaccine reaction. Mm-hmm. And so she had the ambulance come and get him and brought him.
Yeah. Was he admitted?
He was admitted.
Okay.
Then he was finally admitted with much attitude from the head of pizza.
How long was he in the hospital?
For 3 days.
3 days?
Yeah.
Prior to this 10-month visit, mm-hmm. he was a completely healthy, happy, engaging 10-month-old?
He was absolutely healthy. He was like almost like an ideal baby. Like it was just night and day between him and my older kids. Like he was very, like, just such a good temperament.
He got sick.
Yeah.
There's that. But then did he recover?
He did. Like physically, he mm-hmm. was not throwing up anymore, and he wasn't. But it was just more. It seemed to be like. I don't know how to explain it. Maybe like neurological stuff that seemed to be
that
going
changed.
On. Yeah.
What things do you remember seeing happen?
Well, he seemed very overstimulated by things, noises, lights, clothing. He was constantly taking them off. Toddlers do stuff like that, but he was very agitated. Mm-hmm. And he would do things like flipping it. And at first we just thought like that was baby stuff. Like, oh, that's cute. He's like mm-hmm. shaking his head no and being cute. But he just did it like a lot. Mm-hmm. And and it seemed that he was very agitated when he would do that. And he would like pull out his hair. He was constantly like fussy. Mm-hmm. Whereas before he was an even tempered child. But as he got a little bit older too, like in the toddler years, it was almost like a kid being on the like little wind up thing where he just go with no, you know,
very active.
Yeah. But it wasn't just like an active toddler. I mean, it was to the point where there was like, almost like he didn't think about consequence. Mm-hmm.
And how is his connectedness, you know, with you, smiling, interacting, speech, language, those sorts of things?
Sometimes it was okay, but there mm-hmm. was some times where you could call him and like, Calum, and he was just kind of like staring off into space.
Mm-hmm. And that was different than how he was till 10
oh,
months.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And sort of he disconnected.
Yeah, and it seemed like his like mobility kind of changed a little bit too.
In what way?
He was trying, he was almost starting to walk, which was kind of ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And his development always seemed to be a little ahead, and it kind of like regressed per se, to where he was constantly like clumsy mm-hmm. almost, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Seemed like his coordination deteriorated.
Exactly. Yeah.
Are you doing well in school with grades and all of that? Did he always do well?
No, I did not always do well.
So you've done some hard work maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So what did you see early on that where you say he wasn't doing well, what were you seeing?
Well, the focus thing. He had no focus whatsoever. The school psychologist suggested that he was probably on the spectrum and had attention deficit disorder.
Mm-hmm. Your sense that that multiple vaccines on that one visit when he was 10 months old had something to do with his then developmental learning and coordination?
Oh, definitely.
And possible autism spectrum and ADD, ADHD?
I believe so. I believe so because now that, since him having that, I started looking into vaccines and mm-hmm. then just joining different medical freedom groups and anti-vax groups online and like talking to other parents who had similar issues and started just really looking into it. And at that time, I decided that we would quit vaccinating both him and my other children. Mm-hmm. And it seems like he's improved quite a bit. yeah. you know, over the years.
Yeah.
So well, without them.
Yeah. So good for you for doing that research. I mean, we all learn what we learn when we learn it, right?
Oh, yeah.
When we know better, yes. we do better.
Exactly.
I would tell you that good job. And obviously, you've done the hard work. When you kind of start out through life with the learning things being difficult, mm-hmm. it can be super frustrating. And some kids just sort of give up. And I feel like you haven't done that. You've stuck mm-hmm. with it. So good job. Because you've got the intelligence, I have no doubt. And you will overcome because you're already improving it in such a significant way.
Oh, yeah.
And I think what you've figured out is probably pretty wise. To address the camera a little bit and the viewers, okay. You will hear that, oh, no, it's been proven that there's no link between vaccines and autism spectrum or vaccines and ADD and ADHD. Well, I beg to differ, and here's why. We have recently published, and many studies have been published that are showing this link. In fact, I'm traveling around the country sharing this information. You've seen some of it here on this show. It is in the literature. It is very highly significant data that there is a link. So it just takes forever to get the establishment to accept something that goes against what the paradigm is and the paradigm out there. You've heard mm-hmm. this, vaccines are safe and effective,
yeah.
right? So that was when you were trying to get your kid in the hospital at 10 months. Oh no, it couldn't be the vaccines. Well, unless you're aware that it could be, you just can't accept that it might be,
mm-hmm.
right? So it takes a long time to get this information out. It's part of what we're trying to do with this show, and I'm really glad that you were able to come on and share
Absolutely.
This story with our viewers. And I would close with saying this, we've got the COVID vaccine coming at our kids like a freight train, you know, deer in the headlights kind of thing. Do your research, pause if you can, because we are getting more and more information that is so concerning, it's actually shocking to me mm-hmm. that they just approved this for 5 to 11-year-olds. So it doesn't fit the data, which just makes me wonder, well, then what's really going on? Is it really about our kids' health? Is it even really about all of our health? Or is there some other agenda? I'm not saying there is. I'm just saying it doesn't all add up. So do your own research. Put your kids first. You know, as a parent, what are we supposed to do? Protect, right?
Yes.
And so you've done a wonderful job of that.
Thank you
for that. And thank you so much for coming on the show
thank
and
you.
Sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. It is my privilege and honor to introduce you to Dr. Michael Karfeldt. You specialize in integrative medicine. I know you have expertise in oncology as well. Just to put things in perspective, how much COVID are you seeing? How many patients with COVID have you treated?
Well, it's probably been a few hundred.
Okay.
And what I've seen is that if we do basic principles that we use for other viruses, we were actually able to go a long way. So I had patients that called in. I put together what I called an acute viral pack, which included a large doses of vitamin D, because vitamin D, plays such a huge role in the immune system function. It also functions as a hormone. So it has a very strong anti-inflammatory, which will then control, what we know now, and I'm known for a bit, is that, it's that inflammatory response. It's not really the virus that we need to be so concerned about. It's more about the inflammatory response from the virus and calming that inflammation, calming that fire down, and then combining that with a good dose of vitamin A. And in addition to be a strong antiviral, it also protects the body, protects the cells from entry of the virus. So it works on the endothelial lining, on membranes, on the lung membranes, on the blood vessel endothelial lining. So it helps to strengthen even the gut lining and all these different areas that we know now that the spike proteins attaches itself when we talk about the ACE2 receptors.
How many days do you have them take that dose of 100,000?
So I usually have them do that at least for a week.
Okay.
With the vitamin D, we do the loading dose and then we cut it back to like 25,000 IU. So it's still a hefty dose. But that dosage they can do for at least a couple of weeks after. And by that time, they should be good.
Yeah, it is amazing that we can take much higher doses of vitamin D than people realize. I read a study once where they took a
moms who had just delivered and their babies, their newborns, and they split them into two groups. And one set of newborns, they gave them 1,000 IUs a day. And the other set, they gave them a one-time dose of 30,000 for a newborn. And the moms, they gave them 10,000 a day or 300,000 all at once. And they looked what happened to their vitamin D levels over a month, and it was almost identical. Being fat soluble, it stayed in their system. But those are numbers that most MDs would go, that's crazy. No, it works, folks. It's really important. Vitamin A, it's the only vitamin I've ever seen toxicity with. So while short-term high doses like you're recommending, I think is very good for the immune system and protection, we don't want our listeners to just carry on at those super high doses indefinitely. They'll get in trouble.
No, and that's the thing is that it is good to be under the guidance of somebody. So even though I'm saying these dosages and you know, I've had my patients do it, it is always good to have a professional guide you through these processes. So you know, you don't end up you know, getting into trouble. And obviously if you do have liver issues, kidney issues, then you should you know, definitely be under the guidance of somebody. So,
And what else is in your acute viral pack?
And so, yeah, so we talked about the A, talked about the D, and then we have a liposomal form of vitamin C. And I like liposomal just because it then penetrates cell wall membranes better. I usually do about 5,000 milligrams of liposomal vitamin C. And that tends to be good. I mean, you can go much higher if you'd like to, but that seems to be sufficient. Then we got the zinc. Zinc also crucial to activate the immune system. And then also do a silver, you know, a colloidal silver type of product. You know, and Argentin 23 is a very
That's
good
my favorite.
One.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do they take that orally or nasal spray, or how do you have people use that?
So you can, I haven't, because what they've seen a lot is that the COVID initially settles in the products and the glands here, kind of hangs out here for about 3 days and then drops into the respiratory. So I usually suggest then gargle it. And then also you can use spray where you kind of hit the sinuses, because that's another area where, you know, it likes to hang out. And that way you can, you know, a lot of times you can then get drainage and kind of clear out some of that mucus that's there that, you know, the virus can really replicate in.
I can reassure our listeners. I had a autistic patient who was in his, he was 11 or 12, went to India and was told by a practitioner there, you should take 8 ounces a day of Argentin 23 because it can help with his autism. He was nonverbal and actually he got some benefit, but he drank 8 ounces a day for many days just to speak to the relative safety of this product.
And nobody turned blue, right?
No, not with that product. You don't turn blue.
So that, and also echinacea. I love echinacea.
Yep.
Yeah. So I do a strong dose of echinacea throughout the day. It's a great blood purifier. Great to activate the immune system. And that seems, you know, that you can add so many more things if you'd like. I mean, obviously if you have respiratory issues and bring in quercetin, NAC, you have a bunch of different herbs, you know, like, you know, thyme, you know, mullein, oil of oregano, you know, all these kind of things that you can bring in. You know, but, you know, for just kind of general COVID, you know, that pack has probably, I don't know how many hundreds of patients that it's turned around, and I really haven't had many failures with it.
Wow, that's fantastic. So you have a practice of high-risk patients, as you were mentioning, a lot of cancer, autoimmune-type patients. How many patients would you say are in your practice?
Well, I usually see about 20 to 30 a day.
Yeah,
just myself, and then I have a number of other practitioners as well.
Yeah, you know, so it's a busy office, probably thousands of patients.
There's the thousands of patients. Yeah,
with that high risk of population and COVID being supposedly so dangerous for high risk people, what's been your experience? How many have succumbed to COVID?
Well, I actually. For people that I've actively been treating, and nobody succumbed to COVID.
That's amazing. And that's what I was thinking you would say.
Yeah.
And why did I we hadn't talked previously, so I did not know what you were going to say. I just know that this sort of approach that you take is so powerful, folks. If you're watching this, you don't need to live in fear. Take hold of these recommendations, you know, find a practitioner who you can, who you trust, who knows how to work with, you know, these type of treatments, right? This is not your standard MD. They're not going to know what to do with this.
And you're making, I mean, you're driving a very important point. And that is that, you know, number one, the fear for COVID in itself will suppress your immune system and put you more at risk.
Yep.
But then to have the reassurance and knowledge that there are powerful tools that exist, you know, within your reach, you know, where you don't have to rely on strong pharmaceuticals or strong interventions, but you can, there are easy, accessible solutions that exist if you then happen to get COVID, which obviously there is a strong percentage of people that have experienced COVID, and that strong percentage, and, you know, like people like myself, we don't see people die. I mean, I probably, one of the patients that was the most challenging, you know, somebody that I was treating through the process. I mean, they were dealing with cancer, elderly, you know, and caught COVID, also had respiratory issues in the past. And so we were treating them, and we, you know, got to the point where we did, you know, like amniotic fluid, you know, amniotic, you know, we did that as a nebulizer, and then also doing other nebulizing treatments, and he turned around fine. So there are tools if you need to escalate beyond having to kind of rely on kind of harsh and dangerous, you know, pharmaceuticals.
Wow. So let's pivot a moment, because I'm just fascinated by your approaches and the amazing outcomes you're having. What about people who've taken the vaccine or the jab? It's hard to know whether we should legitimately call it a vaccine, but this mRNA technology, whether it's, you know, J&J's DNA that gets converted to mRNA that then starts your body making spike protein, or whether it's just the mRNA from Moderna or Pfizer, these things are tricking the body into becoming factories that make the spike protein that's so incredibly harmful, we believe. Mm-hmm. What are you doing for those folks?
Yeah, and you know, just kind of back up, and what you're saying there is that, you know, we've had to redefine what a vaccine is, you know, because before, a vaccine was something that developed immunity against something, you know, where we kind of did, you know, you got the measles vaccine, and then you were not supposed to get measles anymore for the rest of your life. But because, you know, this technology, you know, this new technology did not fit within that category, you know, all they could promise was, you know, potentially promise was lessening of symptoms and not even promising that they were not going to get COVID or, you know, not going to get symptoms, just they're hoping lessening of symptoms. So they had to redefine, you know, the, you know, what a vaccine is, just because of this very, you know, mRNA technology or genetic, you know, manipulation that we're doing. So,
right. Have you had to deal with people who've had side effects?
I have. Yeah, I have. A couple of examples, you know, a gentleman, you know, that drove in or that came to me from out of town, you know, right after getting the jab, you know, seizures, you know, several seizures daily, you know, severe. And this was a very successful businessman. And now obviously he couldn't travel, he couldn't do so. He had to drive, you know, quite far in order to be able to get to where I'm at. Another gentleman, you know, successful businessman, and he developed cancer right after, you know, so you have other people dealing with, you know, like fibromyalgia like symptoms, you know, where body pain, extreme fatigue, neurological conditions. It's been a lot of issues, in addition to obviously death. You know, I've had people that I've known, I'm sure it's the same for a lot of people out there, that just right after getting the vaccine, they died. I mean, they had good.
Yeah. I'm traveling to the beach where a neighbor here just met with him today. He's moving. He says, I can't stay around here. We've had six deaths. This is a small community with 30 houses. Mm-hmm. They've had six deaths in the last 5 months.
Yeah.
And it's unheard of. You could go years without a death in this community.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm in communication with the ICU nurses here locally, and they're just saying that people are coming in with, the extreme conditions. I mean, myocarditis is obviously a common one, mm-hmm. you know, and they're seeing that in healthy, you know, no prior medical history, you know, healthy 40-year-old men. A nurse practitioner was seeing like seven of them, you know, within a week. And the only common denominator was that they got the jab, you know, prior to. So, in regards to kind of answering your question initially, is that what I do for these people, you know, that are forced then to get the jab, or they get the jab and now they recognize, you know, that they have symptoms that they don't like, you know, and they wish they didn't get the jab. So you want to look at what these spike proteins do, you know, and you want to see what you can do to mitigate some of those functions. And what we're seeing is downregulation then of the immune system is one factor. And since I deal with a lot of, you know, like Lyme disease patients, you know, people are dealing with kind of long-standing chronic infectious diseases. We're seeing then an increase in the activity of the other infectious agents. You know, so let's say a herpes virus will become manifesting itself much more. You know, Borrelia, you know, Bartonella, cytomegalovirus or Epstein-Barr. You know, all these things will then start to become much more active after getting the vaccine. So we need to then go after, you know, increase the activity of the immune system, you know, in order to be able to address these things. And
how do you do that?
Well, so, I mean, if you still have the standards, you know, like we're talking about the vitamin D, C, A, you know, those and zinc, those become very important. But then we use, you know, if people have access to clinics like myself, where we do, you know, ozone IV, vitamin C IV, and those becomes really, and we also use a substance called methylene blue, which is a fantastic substance. It's known as a photosensitizer, but it's also used in anti-aging medicine, but it's a fantastic antiviral. And what they've seen is that it blocks the receptors, the ACE2 receptors that the spike protein tend to kind of latch onto in order to be able to have access to the cells. So, you know, by blocking the entry pathway, then you reduce the effect of the spike protein.
And how is that administered?
So you can do that. You can get that from a compounding pharmacy, and you absorb it very well. You know, so just dosages like 5 milligrams twice a day can be really, really helpful.
Just by mouth?
By mouth, exactly.
Now, I'm curious, you do deal with a lot of immunosuppressed patients with autoimmune conditions. What are your thoughts on, I know the mainstream docs are saying, yes, especially you should get this vaccine. What I'm reading about what this vaccine is doing would surely make me want to pause about that thought. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I would actually say the complete opposite. You know, if you're dealing with that, especially do not get the vaccine, do not get the jab, just because of what we're seeing. Like, for instance, you know, we're talking about the downregulation of the immune system. One aspect that it downregulates is the CD8, which is one of our T cells or immune system aspects that continually monitors the bloodstream, you know, for viruses, for cancer cells. Mm-hmm. And so if you then do any kind of therapy to suppress that activity, you become even more vulnerable. So if you have vulnerable to start with, why do you want to downregulate that? And the vaccine has been shown to downregulate that. So that is one component. Another component is then with the autoimmune, you're dealing with the scenario of where you have the kind of immune system going haywire, meaning that it starts to attack itself.
Right.
And so we're dealing with an issue called pathogenic priming. And this was one of the biggest reason why this vaccine, the coronavirus vaccine, was never out on the market, because it couldn't pass the animal studies because of this very aspect, you know, where you are, even though you're developing antibodies, what they saw is that when they were then exposed to coronavirus again, you know, they would have a strong inflammatory reaction, which in many cases caused death. You know, so if you're then dealing with autoimmune, where you have this process already going on, mm-hmm. you don't want to fuel that anymore. So yeah, definitely in those cases, I really would not suggest that.
You know? Yeah, I completely agree. Are you seeing any, how do I put it, hospitals in your area, or when you talk to patients who have not had the COVID vaccine but need to be in the hospital, are they being treated differently? Are you feeling like there's discrimination going on?
And that is the sad part, is that we... In our mind, we're looking upon the hospital as a safe place to go, you know, for care when we really need it. You know, when we're in a place, we're in a very, very vulnerable place. And I've seen, and I've heard this from other cities as well, that when patients that are not vaccinated, you know, did not get the COVID shot, that the doctors then come them with a feeling that because you as a patient did not take the steps that they feel that you should have taken, that you are not as valuable, or you're not as important to treat because you put yourself in this position. You know, so they kind of come from that attitude. So then if they have a chance to take somebody that had done, you know, taken the COVID shot, they are more apt to take care of that individual. So we've had many patients that were actually just kind of left to the side, not receiving any treatment. In fact, they were dehydrated, not even getting hydration, you know, because they were not, they hadn't taken the COVID shot that the doctor felt that they should have had, you know, which obviously in the past, you know, you know, if somebody is dealing with HIV, you know, and they did things that caused them to have HIV, they were still taken care of.
Right.
You know, they were, but here all of a sudden, you know, you have medical personnel that comes with this attitude that, you know, you are not worthy enough to be taken care of just because you didn't follow, you know, the agenda, you know, which is really sad.
It's so sad and just so uniquely ethically bizarre that so many of our peers are just sort of rolling ethics out the window and going along with this discrimination. I just don't get it. What do you think of mandates?
Yeah. I'm a big, even though I'm from Sweden, and probably because I'm from Sweden, yeah, I grew up in a socialistic country, and having been there, obviously Sweden is not like, you know, in kind of the Eastern Europe before the wall came down, but it's still, you get that flavor of that you as an individual do not have the rights. It's the government that kind of guides as to what you are able and not able to do. So you're at the mercy, so to say, of that. So now, I mean, so here I came to United States, you know, believing, you know, the Constitution, you believe in your individual rights, and you have the right to choose a medical treatment or not choose a medical treatment. So then here you have then a therapy. And again, it's not, you know, if it's a vaccine, it would then develop immunity against something. But since it doesn't develop really immunity against something, it's more a therapy, yeah, because you're using it as a therapy. So here you have a therapy, you know, this shot that's introduced, and that's how mRNA, you know, technology was developed. It was as a therapy, never to become a so-called vaccine. So here you have a therapy that, one, has not been studied fully, you know, so, you know, we're coming along, we're we have this thought that, you know, it should behave in such a way, but we haven't studied it. We bypassed animal studies. So now we're throwing it out into the world, you know, and kind of seeing how people are being impacted and learning as we go from that. You know, we see it's starting to be more clotting risk, you know, so mm-hmm. and they throw in anti-clotting agents into the next, you know, group of vaccines and the next booster. So we have this, you know, this technology, this therapy that we have no idea what it is and what it's going to do. And we're seeing people dying from it. We're seeing this huge amount of adverse reactions, you know, some of them being very extreme. And all of a sudden we are then forced to do this kind of therapy that can then harm us. You know, so I feel that it is our constitutional rights or God-given rights, you know, and delineated in the Constitution that we should have a choice. If an individual wants to do that, you know, they want to take the vaccine, they believe in it wholeheartedly, bless you, go and get it. You know, but if I as an individual feel that this is going to harm me, then you can't mandate that, and you can't go in the back, you know, backhandedly force companies to mandate it. Otherwise, you know, the people will get fired, or I should say like this: the government, when they go to the CEOs, they want to make sure that the people don't get fired. But what happens is that they can stay on without pay.
Now, my thinking, and you can answer with the Sweden experience in mind, is that now what we know we should have done, and it just baffles me that so many states are still masking children and trying to quarantine them or isolate them. If we had opened up our schools, sure, protect the very high vulnerable people, you know, by all means, but the kids could have provided herd immunity. I mean, they could have just gotten this, got it over with, and the death rates in kids was almost zero. Then we would have had natural lasting immunity. I imagine Sweden has a higher level of natural lasting immunity. What do you think?
I believe so. I mean, one of the issues with Sweden is that they're very obedient, meaning that they don't need a mandate really for something to take place. You know, so prior to the vaccine, I feel that they did very well. But now there's a high percentage of Swedes that have gotten the vaccine. And it's really interesting to see that they are now dealing with resurgence of COVID at a much larger scale than they did prior to.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I didn't know that little social piece of it where that, you know, that, as you call it, obedience and just sort of believing that the doctors know best, and so lining up for those vaccines. We sure are seeing that trend. Well, listen, I want to give you an opportunity to give some closing thoughts for our viewers, whatever you want to share from your heart to the audience.
Well, I think the biggest thing is that, you know, the point we were making earlier, there are solutions that are available, so there's no need to be afraid. And because there are natural good solutions that exist, and at the end of the day, you know, when you look at it from a holistic point of view, it is your terrain, so to say, what's going on within your body, and taking steps to make your environment, internal environment, healthier, so that you can then deal with stressors, you know, like a virus that's floating around, you know, because we're exposed to viruses all the time. So we're seeing then people that are not taking care of their terrain, they are the ones that are more likely to be impacted. So take then good, healthy steps to support a healthy lifestyle, good eating, good living, be outside, be among friends, happy, cheerful attitude. You know, these kind of things will have a huge, huge impact on the immune system, will protect you far better than some technology that we still really don't know what it's going to do long term. You know, like I'm talking about the jab. It's so just good, healthy living is going to be a much stronger protection than anything else like that. So I feel if people just can be at peace with that and then become empowered in that.
Yeah. You're so right, Michael. Thank you so much. That's a nice closing summary. Folks, take the power back that's yours, your health, your future, your destiny. It's in your hands. You can't give it over to a doctor anymore, because that just isn't going to work. And unless you find a doctor like Michael here, and then, man, you're in really good hands. So if you happen to be in the Idaho area, you better look this guy up. How do people get a hold of your information?
Well, they can go on my website. Yeah, it's at thecarlfeldcenter.com. Yeah, Carl Feld is one of those tricky Swedish last names. Yeah, K-A-R-L-F-E-L-D-T and center.com. And I have a radio show where I interview, you know, leading experts, you know, like yourself, about all different holistic areas. And it's called Health Made Radio. You have access to that through my website. You know, I do podcasts and so you can just look me up there.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, folks. There you have it. God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you for everything that you are doing.
You're very welcome.
Welcome to Against the Wind. It is my privilege to bring to our show Dr. Billy DeMoss. He is an energetic and passionate speaker over the last three decades. His passion is chiropractic care, community wellness, global sustainability. He's the founder of the Dead Chiropractic Society. That sounds dangerous. And a coalition of Southern California chiropractors. And he's the founder of California JAM. CalJAM allows him to invite world-renowned experts in public health, global sustainability, educate and empower people to find natural solutions more attractive than harmful man-made ones. And he wants to share this desire for the well-being of future generations. His mission is simple: awaken, empower, action. Welcome to the show. It's so great to have you on.
Well, thanks for having me. I'll clarify the Dead Chiropractic Society. That was a riff off the old Dead Poet Society.
I figured as much. So you, my chiropractic colleagues, have had one thing pretty straight from the beginning, the importance of a natural immune system. So I thought I'd start there with you, because it's something I like to educate my patients on, and I think the world needs to be more informed about what are the natural ways we can build our immune system. Because, I mean, everything on the news today is COVID, right? And we're not supposed to talk about it. And we're certainly not supposed to talk about being healthy or building your natural immune system, because we want you to take a vaccine, don't you know? It also makes sense to boost your own immune system. So Dr. Billy, share with us what your key recommendations are for building a natural immune system.
In my practice over the years, I mean, I've been in practice for 37 years, just like you. I've never missed a day at work because I always vibrate at a higher level, but I'm going to teach you what the things that I do. I'm really big on exercise, surfing. Surfing is my connection. It's my grounding. It's my meditation. There's not a better form of exercise on the planet. It floods my body with dopamines. Also, I snowboard when the waves aren't good. I'm really big on eating super healthy. I'm not a vegan, and I applaud people that are vegans, but it doesn't work for my physiology. I like to juice every day, low glycemic juices. I add tons of superfoods in there, whether it's medicinal mushrooms. I put in cannabis leaves in my smoothies seasonally. I'm a big fan of CBD, and I take it every day, because you look at if we can use CBD and cannabis products to cure cancer, why would you not take those things to prevent cancer? I'm all about preventing things. So I juice every day. I use the Vitamix every day. I go intermittent fasting almost every day. Like, I'm intermittent fasting right now. I do bulletproof coffee with Laird Hamilton's creamery, which is a little bit cleaner for me. I'm not really big on dairy products. And then I eat clean, sustainably raised proteins. Like, what did I have last night? A fresh halibut last night. I have a sleep sanctuary that I built in my house, which was all EMF mediated, where the walls are all painted. All the electrical in the house has been mitigated. I'm not getting all these electrical frequencies and RF frequencies that lower immune expression. I watched zero zero TV because I know TV is a bioweapon. I don't even own a TV. I have no cable. I read books, which exercises my brain. And it also gets me to think the proper things. And again, a lot of the stuff I read happens to be, you know, COVID related right now, or things about immune dysfunction or vaccines or whatever it is that I'm into, or conspiracy theory stuff, as we talked about earlier. But then I also have to read stuff to kind of keep me grounded and leveled out, because if you fill this brain with all the negativity, then I got to read some stuff that, I mean, maybe a surfing, a memoir or something like that, or I like to read autobiographies, but I feel that people should read more, and I don't own a cell phone. I also feel that cell phone is another bioweapon. And again, I don't even allow cell phones in my office. There's a huge sign in the front of my office says cell phones are not permitted. Leave your cell phone in the car. This is a heating environment. I act, when people come in on their cell phone and disregard that notice, I go, I don't walk into your house smoking a cigarette, so I don't expect you to walk into my office carrying a cell phone, because I don't think those frequencies are healing frequencies. In fact, I know that they're devastating frequencies. If you read the book Invisible Rainbow by Furstenberg, you'll see how over the period of the past probably 150 years through the Industrial Revolution, we've seen increased electrification of the planet. So I'm big on just mitigating that EMF, and I'm going to do everything I can. All of our computers are wired. We have no Wi-Fi in the office. I have no Wi-Fi in my house. I'm a nutcase when it comes to everything that I can do. But I mean, at 63, I got more energy than, as I jokingly say, a friggin' hummingbird on crack cocaine. Because the fact that I do is I live by the principles that the body's designed to live by. We're not designed to hold the cell phone to our head or stare down at a screen with our head and text neck posture. Which just destroys nerve flow, and it decreases blood flow to the brain. And there's all these things that our research in chiropractic has shown to really benefit a higher expression of health. So that's what I get people to understand. I'm not the back pain guy, the neck. And again, people come to me with that stuff, but I'm really about enhancing neurological function to get you to express at the highest level. And one other thing is also spinal decay. Spinal degeneration is only perpetuated when you have spinal misalignment and we don't have proper maintenance of the spine. So I teach people exercises and things that they can do to augment the life, just like you brush your teeth and floss. In fact, my mom wanted me to be a dentist and end up being a chiropractor. So I'm a dentist of the spine. I do everything I can to prevent spinal decay, because if your spine degenerates and decays, it's going to ultimately shorten your life. You're going to have a horrible life, not only quantity wise, but quality wise. And there's so many things that the science shows us now that we can do to enhance proper spinal hygiene to prolong life in quality and quantity. It's that simple.
Wow. That right there is a masterpiece. Thank you for that. I'm not even going to try to summarize it. I think I could take a shot at it, but that was brilliant. I'd like then to pivot. I think, you know, you touched on the key to health. And that is...
And when I say one other thing, drugs. I don't take any... I've never taken any... I had to take Oxycontin once when I broke my ribs.
Yeah.
I'm not into drugs at all.
That's awesome. You are a personal testament to how to live healthy. I want to pivot from that to what toxins, because I think for health, we've got to get the good nutrition you touched on. We need the exercise. We need the sleep. We need the stress reduction. Chiropractic is a great tool to just keep you balanced. Avoiding you mentioned the toxin of EMF, so, and the no television, which is just toxic in itself, both the screen itself. I mean, if you look at a florist, that's a calming influence. If you look at a screen, that's a stress response. And the no cell phones, wow, that blows me away. I know people who don't have TVs. I want to get there. I think I'm going to get there after this talk with you. I'm motivated.
Liberating. It's like taking a chain off, and I've never had one, so I don't know. But I see people that are literally addicted to them. I have kids that can't even lay on the table back when we had cell phones in the office. And that was one of the reasons I stopped it, that they can't give up their phone for 30 seconds or they're out. It's like a huge, it's like a cocaine addiction, whether people are
I have kids that way, so I know exactly what you mean.
Well, cocaine kills people. Well, so does texting while you're driving, you know?
yeah, so does. So we've got the EMF toxicity. We've got the screen toxicity, the stress toxicity. What other toxins would you put high on your list for folks? You need to pay attention to this.
Well, number one, like both you and I know, we know that there's a lot of neurotoxic chemicals. There's a lot of carcinogenic chemicals. There's a lot of allergen chemicals, toxins in vaccines. So I've been very outspoken about not being anti-vax, being pro-health and doing your research and thinking. So again, all drugs contain a lot of chemicals. Now, the number one way people are being toxified, according to Jim Mars in his book, Population Control, he says the number one way you're being poisoned is through your water. I would never drink water out of a plastic bottle unless I have to, because then you're getting all the xenoestrogens. That's why we're seeing a demasculinization of males. And I don't know if I can still say that, but I did, because I'm old enough now that I don't care what people think. I just tell people the truth. And if it affects the snowflakes, well, I'm sorry. That's just the truth. And the truth is the truth. And then also those xenoestrogens can promote things like breast cancer. So again, I'm really big on water. Your water's loaded with fluoride, which is a neurotoxin, which will crystallize your pineal gland, but also it's also a carcinogen. Again, you've got chlorine, you've got the chlorine alone kills the bugs. So that's going to disrupt your microbiome in your gut. Your microbiome in your gut is 60 to 80% of your immune function. So again, drinking chlorinated water is only going to promote immune incompetence and higher potential, but also those same gut flora promotes natural neurotransmitters for your brain. So you can see everything from depression to anxiety. So water is huge on my list, to a point where I actually started my own water company called Innate Water, where, and again, it's not just your drinking water, it's what you bathe in, because your skin is your biggest organ, and whatever you're bathing in is just like you're drinking it. So I have whole house systems that clean the water coming in for bathing, but also then we go to the next level with getting everything out with the drinking water systems that we have to mitigate that, those toxins. Then you look at the foods. Again, people want to argue with me about organic or inorganic, or, you know, pesticide or insecticide or herbicide coated foods. I mean, if it's going to kill an insect, it's going to probably cause some problems with cells in your body. I'm also a big fan of mitigating any glyphosate, which is going to be on anything that's GMO. So I don't eat any GMO foods. I don't eat anything out of a box, or a can. I mean, I eat really mostly fresh food. It's like people go, "Will you show us how to eat?" And I go, "Yeah." And they want me to do like show them how to shop. I go, "You're just going to spend most of your time in the produce section, you know, where the living food is. If you want to have energy, you eat living foods with living enzymes in it." And the reason I juice is because a lot of the soil that we grow our food in today is deficient of minerals. So you've got to really compress nutrition these days and concentrate nutrition through juicing. And again, I juice everything from celery to, I stay away from the nightshades thanks to, book Plant Paradox by Dr. Gundry. I've really mitigated using nightshades in my diet to decrease the inflammatory load. But low glycemic vegetables like celery, cucumbers with the seeds taken out and the skin taken off to minimize lectin exposure, and turmeric, cannabis. Again, I grow cannabis in my backyard. I've never understood why it was vilified for a year. Again, we know why it was vilified, because it went against Big Pharma. Of course, we don't want that happening. And again, when it's juiced, there's no psychoactive effects. So, I mean, people freak out. Oh my God. You know, there's no psychoactive effect until it's heated to 320 degrees. And that's not going to happen in a Vitamix, or it's not going to happen in a juicing, but there's so many beneficial cannabinoids that balance your endocannabinoid system, which is really everybody thinks the nervous system is mass control. The endocannabinoid system is really the true controller of every system in the body. And again, not only the effects that it helps balance, move you more from sympathetic to parasympathetic, but also helps lower inflammation. It's good for preventing cancer. It's good for preventing bone loss. So those are the things I do. What other toxins do I stay away from? Negative people. That's a big one.
That is a good one. That is a good one.
I call them black holes.
Yeah.
Yep. And I'm fortunate in my practice now. If somebody's like sucking the life out of me, I kind of just boot them. I mean, I'm just getting a referral saying, you know what? I think this is a good fit for it. You know, and I'm in a great place in practice. Been doing it for 37 years and financially pretty much set. But I do this because I love it, Dr. Paul. I do this because I love being around people. And for me, that's been my practice has been my paradise. I come to my practice and I've really bred a practice where people are smart, they're educated, they're on the same page as me. Nobody wears a mask. We all know it's a scam. We know that the whole thing has been promoted to just, I mean, I can say it, you can't say it, but it's a depopulation agenda. And those people that don't do the research and aren't smart enough to see through the crap are the ones that are going to be selected out of the gene pool. That's the reality of this thing. Because we know within the next, according to Sherry Tenpenny and Judy Mikovits, who are both really good friends of mine, that there's going to be a huge die-off. And the huge die-off is going to be those people that did get the COVID vaccine. It's not even a vaccine. It's a drug. Whether people want to believe it or not. So I don't see how a drug can create herd immunity, even that's what they're pushing right now. They're pushing that the only way we can get herd immunity is through the vaccine. Well, what happened to herd immunity that we've gotten since the inception of, you know, the human race, whether you're an evolutionist or a creationist, I can talk both sides of the fence, whichever one you want to hear. But, you know, God made you right. He created you perfect. And you get herd immunity by actually being exposed to the bug. So I'm not afraid of viruses. I'm not afraid of any of that stuff. You just got to go out. You can't be bubble boy floating around your bubble. You know, you need to, like you said earlier, you need to exercise that immune system, just like the Super Bowl team. Super Bowl team just doesn't show up and play the game. It's got to block and tackle and practice, and your immune system needs to do the same thing. That's why in my practice, we promote hugs. You need to have exposure to other. That's how you build natural immunity, by being around people.
Amen, brother.
Way in front of your TV set, eating all the crap and garbage that people eat, not getting any exercise or grounding. So you need to ground too. And that's
what surfing. Yeah. You ground by surfing. I always think of having your feet, bare feet on the ground as grounding, but water is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And so is, I mean, you have to walk on the sand to get to the ocean too. And I'm barefoot right now while we're talking. So. Not that I'm drowning in my office, but I don't like to wear shoes unless I have to, because I think we were designed.
Glad to see you had pants on. I've heard of some people interviewing and it's just the shirt.
Well, I was going to wear my board shorts. But I didn't want to come looking like, they already think I'm nuts in my complex, but if I came and walk wearing a tie and board shorts, they might really think it. So
I think that would have been a good look for you. So to wrap it up, I know you're out there trying to, you know, get the truth out to the people. Tell me a little bit what I'm understanding on my show Against the Wind, Doctors and Science Under Fire. You know, we're being censored if we're not sharing the message that is, quote, approved. Have you experienced any censorship?
If you're not spreading the same narrative that Big Brother is trying to get across. So I had a Facebook page with, and that was censored too, even in the beginning, with 28,000 followers on it, that just on my birthday, about a month ago, just evaporated. Yesterday, I just found out that we have a network with over 1,000 videos. It's a whole library of everything from California Jam to the Dead Chiropractic Society to my in-house workshops, that just evaporated on Vimeo. So it's kind of scary stuff. And that network was it's another source of income for me, because people pay a membership like they would Netflix to view all the old stuff that we had archived. Censorship is alive and well. I've felt it. I know you've felt it. So that's why I do more in-house stuff and public speaking. You can't shut me up, and I'm never shutting up as long as I'm around, dude.
Yep. Well, we're on the same journey of just trying to share with folks what we know. We're privileged, right? We were born at a time before all these chronic diseases were around. So we have that perspective. And I think younger docs, they just accept what is as if that's how it's always been. It has not, folks. It is not normal to be ill. It is not normal to be taking pharmaceutical products. So Dr. Billy, thank you for all you're doing. In closing and parting, what message would you like the viewers to take home? What's your kind of take home shot for our viewers today?
The take home thought I would say to everybody is have faith in your own body and have faith in your body's healing potential. But to do that, you have to really augment and live a congruent lifestyle. You have to eat and exercise and sleep and think congruent to your gene expression. So everything that you do from the minute you're awake, to even while you're sleeping, is promoting health if you're doing it congruent to your genes. So all there. And I want people to read more and watch less TV and stop your screen time and stop using your cell phone so much. Stop being so addicted. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but have faith in the human body. Take care of yourself. And love your neighbor and love people. That's what we need, more love in the world.
Thank you, Dr. Billy. All right. That is this issue of loving everybody, meeting people where they're at, and welcoming them into our world of peace, love, harmony. And you've laid out what you need to do, folks. Just rewatch this interview, take some notes, follow this guy's kind of path.
Yeah, you can follow me at drbillyd.com.
There you go.
Might be a little bit more rough on the edges than I've been right now. I've kind of sometimes get a little bit excited with vocabulary, but that's okay. It's like sometimes people get more obsessed about a F-bomb than they do the fact that we're maiming and murdering children on the planet. So wherever your passion is, it's all right.
Yep. Thanks again, Dr. Billy.
I love you, Paul.
Thank you. I love you too. So I'll be in touch.
Rock and roll.
Dr. Paul here. Doctorsandscience.com is where you go to get access to my exclusive members-only section. This is how you, the viewers, support our work. We have no sponsors. We are fully supported by you, our viewers. What do you get in the members section? It's quite a list. You get access to a couple of my ebooks. The first one is the authoritative reference list for my Vaccine Friendly Plan book. I also have written a book, very extensive, called Everyday Health, that covers pretty much what I think you should be doing if you want to live a healthy life in this world today. But there's so much more. We have a live Q&A every week after the show with yours truly, Dr. Paul, answering your questions. Submit your questions online and I will tackle as many of them as I possibly can and try to answer to the best of my ability whatever burning questions you have. In addition to this, you get transcripts of every show. We have other bonus content, and I think one of the huge bonus content pieces is the PowerPoints of the talks I'm giving as I travel around the country. People are always asking me, how can we get those PowerPoints? This is how you do it. Head on over to doctorsandscience.com and become a member and join the team of Against the Wind. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.